So I got to wondering the other day, and I started calculating how long I've been alive. It turns out I've been alive 1.6 billion seconds. And then I thought, well, how long have I been saved? 1.2 billion seconds I've been saved. And I was thinking, you know, I haven't regretted a single one of those seconds being saved. I've regretted a lot of things in my life. I've done a lot of things I'm not proud of. I've had good things happen that bad stuff came with it. But never have I regretted a second of accepting Christ into my life. And I don't know anybody that has. So in Exodus 14, we're going to start in verse 3. And this is the Lord speaking here. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel that they are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. So we're picking up this story. If you guys will recall, Moses saw the burning bush, and God lit a fire in him to go free his people from the rule of Pharaoh. And during that, you know, Moses said, I'm slow of speech. I stammer. I'm not really up for this job. But God gave him the strength and gave him the ability to go do that. And it took some convincing for Pharaoh to let God's people go. There were plagues involved. There were frogs. There was locusts. There was disease. And it was a pretty tough thing for Pharaoh to go through to finally get to the decision of, yeah, we're going to let this thing happen. But here they are. They've left Egypt, and they're headed away, led by Moses, heading toward the promised land. And Pharaoh is saying here that the children of Israel are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. So what he's saying there is they're kind of wandering around. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know where they're going. There's no way out for the children of Israel. Even though they've departed, they're not doing well on their journey. What Pharaoh saw was his might and his mighty army as an overwhelming force of the weak children of Israel. In verse 4 it says, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart that he shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. So God had set this up so that he could show his power and that he'd be honored in this event. And you can be sure that once God declares something, that thing is going to come to fruition. That thing is going to happen. Just as your salvation is done, just as your supply is done, if the Lord has guaranteed it, it's going to happen. So in verse 5 it says, and it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people. And they said, we have done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us. So this is a place where they were reconsidering the fact that they'd let God's people go. They said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? They were enjoying, Pharaoh and the people of Egypt were enjoying being served. They were regretting and forgetting the situation. They were regretting that their slaves had were going away and they didn't have that service anymore, but they were forgetting the reason they let them go in the first place, to get rid of God's wrath off of them. So they were regretting and forgetting in this situation. He forgot about the frogs, the locusts, the plagues that God had sent on his kingdom. In verse 6 it says, and he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and the captains over every one of them. This was a mighty scene. This is a lot of chariots. This is a very large army. A mighty scene from a mighty Pharaoh. These captains were the taskmasters for the children of Israel. So the soldiers here were known to the children of Israel and feared by them. Pharaoh was saying, it's time that we go get our slaves back. We're going to reclaim the children of Israel. You know, many of us were once serving a taskmaster that we escaped. The Lord freed us from behaviors, from habits, from addictions, from the grip of sin, from self-centeredness, from feeding our own bellies. That was a taskmaster in our lives. But remember, you may have been freed, but you're still being pursued by the enemy. Just like the children of Israel in this situation. Verse 8, and the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he pursued after the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with a high hand. They went out celebrating with a high hand. Focus just a moment on the fact that the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. It always interests me and scares me a little bit when the Lord hardens someone's heart. It's a scary thought to me, because at that point they're not thinking right anymore. In this case, I see this as Pharaoh had a blind rage with no mercy. His heart was hardened to pursue the children of Israel. He was willing to forget all the pain of why he let them go and go after them. Verse 9, but the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamping by the sea. I'm not going to try those next two words. I'll let somebody else do that. Verse 10, and when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Now remember, as I said before, these soldiers were the taskmasters for the children of Israel. So they not only knew what that army could bring to them, they knew intimately and personally some of these people. And I'm sure had what we call today PTSD, some kind of post-traumatic stress syndrome. I'm sure they were scarred by the treatment that they had for all those years under those soldiers. So I can imagine it was more than just a little bit of fear. It was more than just a little bit of fear when they were being pursued here. So Pharaoh's army in this situation is near their camp and basically has them blocked in a great show of force. Life often puts us in situations where we see no way out, no light, only fear and despair. Satan pursues us with a hardened hate, just like Pharaoh is demonstrating here. He seeks nothing but our destruction. Sometimes we can feel the enemy so close to us that we can feel his breath on our back. And sometimes we can even feel the claw marks coming down our back, knowing that the only thing left is for him to pounce and devour us. That's basically where the children of Israel were in this situation. And I can tell you, based on the next verse we're about to read, that all hope was lost. And you'll see a little bit later that this was happening at night. So the trouble came in the darkness of night. Have you ever noticed how that kind of happens with us? The enemy pursues us and he kind of settles in on us at night, tries to scare us. Verse 11 says, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us, and to carry us forth out of Egypt? So basically they're saying, okay, Moses, we followed you. I mean, he's not even presenting probably as a articulate person. He's stammering around. They're blocked off now, and they're saying, you should have left us in Egypt. We would have been better off back with our taskmasters. In verse 12 it says, Is this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt? Sorry, let me start over because I forgot how to read. Verse 12. Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. We'd have been better off in the slavery with no freedom and under daily oppression. Can you believe they're saying that? This situation is much worse. Following the Lord is basically what they're saying. Following the Lord is much worse. They had reached a place of despair. Now we're in a mess that we can't get ourselves out of. Well, that's right. They were in a mess they couldn't get themselves out of. Just like most of the messes we get ourselves into. We get ourselves into places we can't get ourselves out of. Verse 13, it says, and Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. Moses is making a statement there. You may think you're in trouble, but God's going to handle this situation. He said, stand still. And to me that says, okay, I hear all the complaining, but stand still and be quiet. Stand still and be quiet. Soon these Egyptians won't be a problem for you ever again, is what Moses told them. In verse 14, the Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. So, hold your peace is another way of saying, be quiet. So he's saying, fear not and stand still and hold your peace. That's the instruction that was given. And seek or look for the salvation of the Lord. This enemy had bound them for years. And that same enemy that had bound them is in full pursuit, with nothing left but the pouncing and the destroying. They're right there upon the camp. Verse 15 it says, and the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. But lift thou up the rod and stretch out thine hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. So the Lord, after he said, stand and hold your peace, the next instruction was, go forward. He said, move forward. He sent his direction to God's man through Moses, and he told him to raise the staff. If Moses had done anything other than what God had said, all the people would have suffered. They wouldn't have gotten out of their mess. To me, that just says that sometimes God sends direction through his man, through his preacher, that if our preacher is not sensitive to it and doesn't do the right thing in that situation, it's not just him that would suffer. It's all of us. So we should respect decisions that are made by our pastor, because the responsibility is great. So, in verse 21, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night. And he made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. So this wind, this strong wind was strong enough to push the sea waters back. It must have been extremely strong to push, to divide water that deep that has its own currents and its own flow and its own ebbing and flowing. It was a mighty scene of God's power. I can't help it, so I started looking, what's the scientific explanation of this? And to my great pleasure, there's a lot of explanations out there for how this sea was divided that has nothing to do with God. There's some nature movement that can happen. Now, this is on the internet, so it must be true. This wind can blow the water back so consistently that it pushes the whole shoreline back and kind of spills it over the back of the lake or the ocean, whatever it is. And that's evidently, according to the internet, that's what happened. And they just walked right through. But I don't know how Okay, I'm just going to break it down to where I can understand it. How many in here uses a leaf blower? Okay, a leaf blower, right? So if you go up to a puddle of water with a leaf blower and you blow directly into that puddle, it's going to sling water. I mean, it may be dry in that spot where you're blowing, but it's going to sling water all over. You know, the puddle's going to move somewhere else. And there is no wall. There is no wall on either side of the dry land. So that didn't happen that way. I'm sorry, the description is very clear right here what the experience was. So I started trying to imagine, well, what did this wind look? I mean, how did this work? So if I go back to my leaf blower, if I blow directly on the puddle, it's going to clear out a spot right there where I'm blowing. It's just going to kind of push back and fall. So I'm picturing the wind coming out of the sky straight down or close to straight down. But now it's so strong it's pushing water back and people have got to walk into that wind. It seems to me like that would be knocking people all over the place. So I'm picturing the wind doing this and creating a protection, a place for people to walk through. Hey, it's just as good as the internet. It's my theory. But we don't have to explain God's work through natural means, and we don't have to understand the science of it, even though it may be fun to think about or talk about. But these children of Israel walked across that dry land, and they did it all night. From what I was able to tell, it's not really known how many people was in this group, but it was anywhere from 30,000 to 2 million is kind of the guesstimate out there. So that's a pretty broad number, but let's just cut it in half and say somewhere over 1 million people. Can you imagine 1 million people of all ages marching through a, you know, 2x2 dry piece of ocean? I don't think so. I think it was much wider than that. This was a much bigger scene. It was probably a whole crowd. You've seen a stadium empty. I know you've been to sporting events or concerts, and you watch how people flow out of a stadium. That's going to be about 60,000 people, and it's a slow moving process because there are people of all ages, all abilities. But that's what happened. They were crossing this sea on dry ground all night long. In verse 22 it says, "And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen." Verse 26, "And the Lord said to Moses, Stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, and upon their horsemen." So Moses, in verse 27, stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its strength when the morning appeared. Okay, all right, so let me keep reading. "And the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea." So I find it interesting that the Lord allowed the children of Israel to escape in the night, but he waited until the dawn of morning so they could turn back and watch the destruction of their enemy. I think that was a little bit of a gift to his children, so they could see that maybe not the joy of seeing their enemy suffer, probably not that, but the fact that they're never going to pursue you again because they don't exist anymore. I've wiped that threat from the face of the earth. These people who have oppressed you for all these generations will never pursue you again. That's a peace that had to have come from that the Lord granted them that day. Verse 28, "And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the hosts of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the land, out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. In verse 31, and Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. There will come a day, if we can fear not, and if we can hold our peace, that we may also get to see the destruction of our enemy. That problem, that thing that's putting pressure on you, someday may just be turned to vapor. God may just make that move for us. It may not feel like it in the darkness of night when surrounded and overtaking and not knowing what to do. But God has a plan and a purpose for our lives, for your life, that he will see to fruition. He will see it happen. He doesn't need our strength. He doesn't need our brilliance. He doesn't need our talents. He doesn't even need our effort to accomplish it. He only needs our faith, our submission, and our obedience, which he will honor to victory. You may feel no hope, but there is hope. You may see no way, but there is a way. You may think destruction is sure and soon, but victory is coming, and it's coming right on God's time. You know, they say the fear may come in the night, but victory and joy will come in the morning. Thank you for your attention.